Now, Eric Berkowitz has written a book which is called Dangerous Ideas. It's a brief history of censorship in the West, from the ancients to fake news. And we know all about the fake news, don't we? Some of the things that have been said about the book over the last couple of weeks: the sweep of this book is vast and its judgment thoughtful. A magnificent book, original in scope, and a timely contribution to an ongoing debate. Let's talk to Eric Berkowitz. Eric, good afternoon, my time. Good morning, your time. How are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to be on the show.
Good. Delighted to have you, Eric. Are you on the West Coast? Is it very, very, very early for you?
I'm in San Francisco, and it's just getting light, but, you know, I'm fine. It's all good.
We have to earn a crust, don't we? In that way it is. one of the comments that I mentioned there, that it's a timely contribution to an ongoing debate. I suppose since men were able to talk and women able to talk and were able to write and publish things, they would be doing things that weren't 100% correct. So has it gotten worse, or is it just moving with the times, this whole fake news and censorship and the whole thing?
Well, I think to some extent you and I have grown up in a golden age. From the end of World War II to several years ago, I don't think there's ever been a period in which speech has been broader and in which opposing opinions have been more tolerated. There is no question, however, that we are retrenching on a number of levels, I think for both good reasons and bad, that is, for humanitarian reasons and for quite the opposite. And I think we're falling into some pretty rough old habits. You were talking about fake news, etc. There's assaults on free speech really from all fronts at this point.
Okay. And is there anything that we can do to counteract it? Is there any way that, in other words, is this going to continue? When we can't, there's not a lot we can do in terms of legislation for social media, although we do see some cases arising. So is it a legal answer? Is it, what is it? Is it ethical? What is it?
I think it's really a cultural answer. Honestly, we, you know, people are looking to social media regulation to clean up the dirt in society itself. We're looking to legislate niceness and kindness and a lack of hatred. And in doing so, I think it's going to backfire wildly. And also, as we criticize, I think rightly, the likes of Mark Zuckerberg, et cetera, the legislation that's, you know, coming into place is essentially going to give him a lot more power, right? Such as in England, in Britain, there's a piece of legislation moving through to put on the platforms a duty of care to prevent any adverse psychological harm at all, even if the speech is legal. So effectively what we're saying is, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, we can't stand you, but we want you to start to monitor everything and make sure that no one gets offended by what's said. That's simply not going to work, and honestly, it's a little foolish. I mean, the solution, I think, Jer, is to rediscover a sense of tolerance. You know, that by hearing something that bothers us, hearing something that hurts us, that doesn't necessarily mean that we need to stop it. Because when you give people power to legislate speech, it always goes in the wrong direction. Believe me, it's happened 1,000 times.
Overall, is censorship a good thing or a bad thing?
Overall, I think censorship is quite a bad thing. Because it gives one party, one group, one set of people power over the access to information over another. I mean, censorship can be, you know, put in for reasons that, you know, that sound good, such as legislating against fake news. I mean, who wants fake news? Such as legislating against hatred. Who wants hatred? Except for, here's what happens. And it's happening right now, dozens of cases around the world. People put in fake news laws, and they use them to squelch truth. I mean, particularly for, you know, COVID. Like, various countries are arresting thousands of people for COVID misinformation, when what they're effectively doing is revealing the shortcomings of government. you know, and we also can't forget that people like Mandela and Gandhi and others were put in jail for hate speech. So, I mean, overall censorship, I think, is wrong because it puts power in the wrong place. I really do.
Okay. So when you're looking at censorship, as you say, overall, it's a wrong thing to do. But aren't the biggest censors really our governments? And if we're looking to them, as you say, it's a cultural, maybe it's a cultural swing. But if you're looking to our governments, we're looking to the wrong people completely, aren't we?
Absolutely. I think we're, you know, there's not a, when you look to the government, it's let me start again. It's interesting. Over the last several decades, you know, the people from the center left have seen censorship as a bad thing, and it was something that the government did, and you know, gains for free speech were always at the expense of government power. Now people are looking to not only governments but also the social media platforms and their university presidents to censor. We're asking for censorship. We want it to protect our feelings, to protect against our offense. Now, that's not to say that offense, you know, that people aren't offended, people aren't hurt by speech. Speech can indeed be harmful. The problem is, I mean, I'm not denying that. When I hear speech that presses my buttons, my first impulse is to try and shut it down. It's like a siren or a swarm of mosquitoes. But I think we really need to rediscover the fact that by tolerating speech we don't like, we're also protecting our own speech, and we're also protecting, and you know, and we and making it possible for us all to sort of develop. I mean, I think to some extent, you know, as much as I detested and continue to detest Donald Trump and couldn't stand hearing him, you know, reading what he says on Twitter every day, I think that having that open probably contributed to his loss in the election, because enough people were reminded on a daily level what a, you know, what a bad person he is. By squelching speech, it just goes somewhere else.
Okay, let's go to the book, Dangerous Ideas, A Brief History of Censorship in the West from the Ancients to Fake News. So where do you start then? Where do you start in the book, and what journey do you take us on?
Well, I start, you know, effectively with mythology and the formations of language itself, and how people find words themselves and images themselves to be quite, quite frightening. And, you know, people believed very, very fervently that, you know, it was that God created the world with words, and words itself can destroy it. So people sort of took words as magical things. And I carry us through ancient Greece, in which, you know, Athens was one of the most, you know, remarkably open places in the world, except for when things began to turn wrong in Athens in their war with Sparta. All of a sudden speech restrictions came in because people were thinking that people were saying things that were displeasing to the gods, et cetera. So I carry speech through Greece, through Rome, et cetera, you know, finding the common threads where, you know, the, people in power simply are, you know, power is fragile, and as powerful as governments can be, they simply could never stand hearing words, you know, against them. All the way to President Xi Jinping of China now, who's banned the image of Winnie the Pooh on the internet.
That's right.
Because people are ridiculing him and saying that he resembles Winnie the Pooh. There's a certain touchiness that we have. Yeah. I mean, it's as if Winnie the Pooh actually diminished the control of the Communist Party of China. So I trace, you know, and of course through British history, the fact that of all the efforts that the governments continually made to squelch speech, by doing so you only draw attention to it and you only juice sales. Censorship effectively doesn't work. Effectively, the best thing that one can do for a piece of writing is to censor it. The price goes up. Interest rises. I mean, isn't that the same with you?
Absolutely.
And me, when we hear that someone doesn't want us to read it, that's the first thing that we turn to. Well, and so that's the, you know, that theme also I follow, the forbidden fruit aspects of it.
You know, the way the governments seal documents for 30 years or 25 years in some cases. And that is that is the case in Ireland where I am. I think it's a 30-year rule. And so on the 29th, 30th of December, when the 30-year-old boxes are opened and we hear about what was in the news and how this was done and how that was done, is that a form of censorship or is it state security or what is it?
I think it depends on the context. I mean, oftentimes I think governments do that to protect people who might be living and might be affected by the response to these things. So they sort of hit upon these rules to let those affected die off, you know. But on the whole, I think that the government impulse to seal documents, just it's sort of a reflexive thing, is, yes, a bad thing. And, you know, effectively now, in Britain, in Ireland, in the United States particularly, we're constantly arguing over history. And this is really a part of it. That's the way of sealing history. I mean, in America, there's massive battles right now. There are laws being passed. They're unconstitutional, barring courses in schools teaching the place of race in the United States. I mean, that's like teaching the history of your body without your two legs. I mean, we're constantly fighting over history and over historical narratives. In Britain, that's a very, very big thing. And I just read in Korea where there's now criminal laws being passed. You can go to jail for 5 or 10 years for taking the wrong position on uprisings or democratic uprisings as recently as 1980.
Right.
So not only does censorship really cover the present, but what you just touched on, Jura, is that governments are constantly looking to mold the past and you know, the past is really every bit as urgent to censor as the present is.
I used to think about that when I was in school, and that was a long, long time ago. It was in black and white times. and I used to wonder about the history that we were learning. And I used to kind of say to myself, well, it all depends on who's writing it. And even at a young age, I used to think about our government and the way things were being run in our country and maybe in Britain and maybe in America, but less so because I've been a young age. And I wonder, you know, I used to wonder, well, when such, it's like when a politician dies or a certain individual might die, you never hear a bad thing said about them. Even though there would be a lot to be said about certain people.
But there aren't bad things said.
So really, I suppose, it's all about, you'd wonder in 100 years' time when children are going to school and they learn about President Trump, who will have written that? Or what version will we be teaching those children at that time? Well, we won't because I won't be here. But is that in itself a form of censorship?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I shudder to think of what Trump himself and those who enabled him would have done if there wasn't a First Amendment keeping him and his group in check. I mean, the efforts to squelch the press in the past 4 or 5 years in the United States have been unprecedented. So, you know, Trump might be, you know, cooling his heels in Florida, but the impulse, let's just say it, the racist impulse that moved a lot of his support is still very, very much alive. And so how will Trump be remembered in 50, 80, 100 years? It's utterly up to what is the agenda of the person writing it and under what, and how much freedom does that person have to write? I mean, let's not forget, in Poland right now, it is illegal, highly illegal, to write anything that implicates the Poles in the destruction of the Jews during World War II.
Really?
That is, it is illegal to teach accurate history. and two historians who wrote this fat, footnoted book about complicity above Poles during the Holocaust, sort of an academic book, have had to get up and apologize, Cultural Revolution style, for their writing of that book. So, I mean, if Trump... we're now in that process now where it's now in the United States where it could very well become, at least until the courts strike it down, illegal to teach American history accurately. So I think in answer to your first question of what direction are we going in, I think it's extremely important for us to look around, get as much perspective as we can, which is hopefully what my book would provide, and rediscover the values of tolerance and rediscover the fact that, you know, maybe if there's false stories going around, other people might think that they're true, and it's worth keeping the garbage floating so that the truth rises.
Okay.
I after 2.5 years of research on this, I couldn't believe it more strongly.
Okay. Just a comment from one of our listeners relating to George Orwell. He who controls history controls the present, and he who controls the present controls the future. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, if I have any heroes in life, Orwell would be in the top two or three. I mean, he said something else, that in authoritarian societies, history is, he called it a palimpsest, something that you could scrape clean and reinscribe as often as necessary. And, you know, we would all do well. I mean, put my book aside for a minute, pick up some Orwell.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, yes.
And read his essays, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I rely on him heavily.
I'm going to leave you go after this question, but discrimination is wrong. Censorship is wrong. Is there any such thing as good censorship? Like sometimes you can get away with positive discrimination.
Well, you know, we can look at things like Holocaust denial laws, you know, which are specifically aimed at stopping speech that fuels white supremacy, not necessarily only against the Jews, but against any other minority. And, you know, it's hard to argue with something like that. The problem is we have to look at the reality of it, is that it's not stopping any Holocaust deniers from actually thinking that.
Okay.
And so we have to confront the limitations of even our best intentions.
Gotcha. Alrighty. The name of the book is Dangerous Ideas, A Brief History of Censorship in the West from the Ancients to Fake News, written by Eric Berkowitz, who has been my guest for the last 20 minutes. Eric, thank you so much for an insight into your thoughts and into the book. I wish you well with it. It's available, I know, in all good bookstores. It'll be on our bookstore as well at tre.radio. And I hope that you sell many, many copies.
Well, thanks for having me. This was great.
Loved having you. So thank you very much indeed, Eric. Chat soon again. Okay?
Bye-bye.
Bye now.